The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer. Rebecca is a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth during this volatile market. Book your complimentary call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. Now, today I'm going to begin a discussion which I'll continue in the week of the full implications of the court's decision overturning Roe versus Wade. Stuart Rhodes, the head of the Oath Keepers, joins me from prison. We're going to talk about his role on January 6th. Want to explore why the White House is treating Biden as a toddler. Is it because he's an intellectual infant? And I'll make the case for why even Wyoming Democrats can't save Liz Cheney. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
The Supreme Court came out on Friday with the expected, but nevertheless, bombshell decision overturning Roe versus Wade. I mean, that was the real meaning of the decision. The immediate focus was on the Mississippi law, which essentially outlawed abortion after 15 weeks. And there was one justice, as it turns out, the Chief Justice, Roberts, who wanted to sustain Roe, but in a sense, limit it. He wanted to uphold the Mississippi law and say, in effect, that, yeah, you do have an abortion right. States, in other words, can't regulate abortion for the first 15 weeks, but after that, they can. And what's really interesting is that this was a kind of middle position that Roberts was hoping to sell, you may say, both to the left and to the right. Oddly enough, had both sides gone along with it, you would have had a different outcome. But neither side was interested in it. In fact, I remember when Elizabeth Preligar, the Solicitor General, was arguing the case, she said there's no middle ground. She goes, look, either you uphold Roe and the Casey decision, Planned Parenthood versus Casey, or the whole thing falls. And I guess the court decided, let it fall. So the only guy who's trying to sustain this middle ground was in fact Roberts. Now, I'm going to discuss in some depth over the next few days what the court ruled and what it didn't rule and what the meaning of it is and what's happening and the left's reaction. But I do want to just take on board the momentousness of this event. I mean, I came to the United States in 1978. Roe was, I guess, at that point, 5 years old. It had been passed in 1973. So my entire adult lifetime in the United States, Roe has been, you may say, the law of the land. It was an illicit law, an illegitimate law. There never was a constitutional right to abortion, but nevertheless, there it was. As a practical matter, we were living under Roe. And only now can we say, and I didn't even think this would happen, probably not even in my lifetime, that we would be living life after Roe. But that is the United States today. And it is a momentous shift, something that had been almost, you may say, not only in law, but law ultimately makes its way into the culture. People have certain cultural expectations. Like, I got pregnant. Okay, that's fine. I'll go have an abortion. That became a sort of, are you going to have an abortion? You know, this kind of question suddenly now becomes problematic. In other words, it's not that that you won't be able to get an abortion in the United States. That's not the case. Some people are acting like that is the case. And I think it's almost amusing to have all these people in blue states protests in places like, you know, Portland, Oregon, California, New York, DC, people screaming, oh, my right to an abortion. And yet, there's almost no question that they will be allowed to have abortions in those states. So, the memo, in a sense, comes out from the Supreme Court. If you want to kill your kid or your unborn kid, move to a blue state or travel to a blue state. That's another way. That's another way for this to happen. Now, what has caused this momentous shift? I think it's narrow to think of it merely as a legal shift. It is true that ever since Roe, there has been the question of where is this abortion right in the Constitution? It's just not there. There are other rights specified in the Constitution, but not this one. This is a kind of fictitious, you may say made up right that, seven justices concocted in 1973. And again, it's a little paradoxical to people saying, well, these five justices, four of them male, and of course, Amy Coney Barrett, and there's an attempt sometimes to depreciate her role as if she was just sort of a paralegal who signed on to this. So these four men are making this decision. But let's remember that seven men made the decision back in 1973. There were no women on the court at that time. And so it was a man's call to legalize abortion, you may say, or virtually legalize abortion on demand nationwide. But I think that the shift has also been a cultural shift. People have realized in a very clear way that what is in the womb is alive. And it's alive. You can see it. You can see it on the ultrasound. You can hear it in terms of the heartbeat. You can see the organs. The simple observational power of that can't be denied. And the technology to do it was obviously much less clear going back several decades. And so this whole notion of when does life begin, we really don't know. Or maybe it's a life, but it's, we're not sure it's human life, really. What other kind of life is it? Is it a bird? Is it a rat? No, if it's life, it has to be human life. And if it's human life, isn't human life worthy of protection? So what if you want to call it potential life? Well, it's still a life that is in the process of formation. Even, a one-year-old is in the process of formation. Its brain is being formed. Its organs are developing. So this idea that somehow this life can be treated as non-life up to some designated point, absolutely absurd. Recently announced that Walmart has canceled MyPillow. They won't be selling Mike's products at their stores. Well, this is crazy. When are these retailers going to stop letting the left bully them into submission? Enough is enough. Well, Mike always has a solution, and this time he's offering a MyPillow pillow flash sale. As low as $19.88 with promo code Dinesh. Call 800-876-0227. Don't miss this incredible flash sale and help Mike fight back against these box stores that have canceled his products. That number, 800-876-0227, or go to MyPillow.com. Don't forget to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I'm talking about the Supreme Court's momentous decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. And the effect of that is not to outlaw abortion, but to disperse it, disperse the decision about abortion to the several states. Each state can now pass its own laws. So in a strange way, the court wasn't even deciding the abortion issue at all. What the Supreme Court was deciding is, on this question, who should decide? Should we, the Supreme Court, decide for the whole country? Should each individual woman in the country have their own say, you may say, over their womb, and it's like, this is mine. It may be a separate life. It may have its own toes. It may have its own fingers. But nevertheless, it inhabits my body, and therefore I have, you may say, the life or death decision to make over it. Who should decide? And the court basically said, look, we live in a democratic society. When there isn't an enumerated right in the Constitution that has to be protected even against the majority, then the democratic process applies. And that means that states get to make these decisions through a process that will, in effect, reflect the moral consensus, or at least the moral plurality of people living in that state. Now, it's kind of interesting that when I look at all the articles on the topic, they seem to have a kind of erroneous premise. Here's the New Yorker. When the Supreme Court takes away a long-held constitutional right. But it was not a constitutional right. It never was. And that's really Alito's point. Alito says, in offense, we're not taking away a right. The right never existed. Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided from the beginning. It's kind of like saying the Brown decision in 1954 overturned the right to segregation. No, there never was a segregation right. The Plessy decision going back to the 1890s was bogus from the beginning. Yes, it was in effect for 50 years, but that doesn't put it into the Constitution in any more than an abortion right can be found in the Constitution before. No, it wasn't there before. It wasn't there now. It isn't there now. So that is the key point. And this is even what the dissent ignores. Here is the dissent. Rescinding an individual right in its entirety and conferring it on the state, this is an action the court takes for the first time in history. No, there never was an individual right. The individual right was fabricated from the beginning. Now, the immediate consequence of all this is kind of amazing, and that is that abortion clinics are closing down in the red states. I'm just reading now from Life News. West Virginia is now abortion-free as the state's last abortion center has stopped performing abortions. Confirmed, all three abortion businesses in Alabama have stopped killing babies following the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe. Now, how is this possible? I mean, normally, abortion is now immediately illegal in Kentucky, Louisiana, and South Dakota. How is it possible for a court decision to come on Friday and abortion clinics to be closed, you know, by Monday? And the answer is this. A number of these states had what are called trigger laws. So a trigger law is, okay, you're claiming that abortion is constitutional, there's a constitutional right, and there's a Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade, in effect, that declares, however implausibly, that there is this right. We will pass a law so that if at any moment that this right is rescinded or overturned or proclaimed to be bogus by a majority on the Supreme Court, then boom, automatically, our pro-life law goes into effect. And so a bunch of states, I believe a dozen or so, have these trigger laws that kick in. They kick in virtually instantaneously, maybe not quite as quickly as the examples I gave. But my point being that these states don't have to go back and make new laws. They've already passed the law. The law is valid as long as it is upheld in the Supreme Court. And that is the case now. Now, there's a bitter backlash, you may say, from the left, and I'll be talking about it in the days ahead. But here, I just want to talk about the idea that's been echoed by several people. Even Susan Collins gave it a little bit of rhetorical deference. And this is the idea that somehow these Supreme Court justices lied when they went through their confirmation process. They lied. Well, they lied how? They didn't lie by saying, we're never going to overturn Roe versus Wade. In fact, they refused to answer that question. So you can say that they lied about that. Well, what did they lie about? Well, they lied about the fact that they said in their hearings that they considered Roe to be, quote, settled precedent. But there's no lie there, because that was simply a matter of saying, I mean, if some law, however preposterous, has been in effect for multiple decades, in this case, 40 years, well, 73,
almost 50 years,
it is settled precedent. It may be bad precedent, but it's still settled precedent. And so I don't think these guys lied. I think what they did is they just played the stupid verbal game of the left. The verbal game of the left is to try to extract from justices statements in advance about how they're going to rule on questions like Roe. And the judges were like, listen, we'll play along with this little, you may call it verbal ping pong. It's just a measure of how degraded our political culture is that justices can't, in effect, say candidly, listen, you lunatics, there's no abortion right in the Constitution. Hold up the Constitution to the light, squeeze lemon juice on it, see if you see an abortion right in it. You won't see one any more than we do. So since you can't be honest and do that, you have these little verbal pirouettes. But when the time comes, the justices ultimately do what they did in this case. They actually looked at the Constitution to see if there was such a right, and in it they found none. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Exercising, climbing stairs, all the stuff young people take for granted. Well, these aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to suffer and endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. Debbie's excited. She finally gets to do her bar class, the exercise class, now that she's alleviated her frozen shoulder thanks to Relief Factor. Debbie knows that she stops taking it, well, the pain could come right back. So she's like, I don't want to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. The number again, 833-690-7246. So go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. So guys, I have on the podcast today actually calling in from prison, Stuart Rhodes. Stuart Rhodes is the founder of the Oath Keepers. He was born into a family of migrant farm workers. He's a former Army paratrooper, Yale Law School graduate. He also worked in D.C. with Ron Paul on the Ron Paul staff. And he's currently in confinement and sometimes in solitary confinement for his role in January 6th. Hey, Stuart, thanks for joining me. Let me start by asking you just about conditions in the prison. Are you in solitary on a constant basis, and what is the rationale for keeping you in solitary?
Yes, I've been in solitary confinement since January, and they now have me in the Alexandria detention facility, the Alexandria Jail, just outside D.C., and the rationale that's been given me by U.S. Marshals is that I'm so high profile that they're doing this for my own safety, which I find ludicrous. I'm not afraid of the inmates. They all treat me with respect. I have no problem. So I think really it's intended to coerce confessions, to coerce plea bargains.
Talk a little bit about just the experience. I mean, to me, it's almost unimaginable to be in a cell for, 23 hours a day with 1 hour to get out and do exercise and get a little bit of sunshine. Just talk about what that's like hour upon hour upon hour. Do you have books with you? Is there anything you can have with you in the cell?
Yes, we're in a cell, 22 hours. We get two-hour breaks. I'm outside now with one other inmate. We're indoors, though. We don't go outside. We get 1 hour of sunshine a week. That's it. They take us to a rec yard with sunshine. We have books. I have a radio, thankfully. I listened to your interview with Dan Bond, it was awesome. And I get to listen to C-SPAN, and I catch, some of the conservative commentators to catch up on the news. We are allowed books. We're only allowed the books they have in the facility. No one's allowed to send me a book, unfortunately.
I see. And now, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, tell people about the Oath Keepers, because people might have heard about it, but in your words, why did you found the Oath Keepers, and what is the sort of mission of the Oath Keepers?
Well, a big impetus for me was what I saw during Hurricane Katrina, where you had house-to-house gun confiscation that was grossly unconstitutional, and you had, sadly, law enforcement officers and National Guardsmen from across the country obeying those unconstitutional orders. So we realized that we need to do an outreach to the current serving. So I thought Oath Keepers is made up of current serving and former military, police, firefighters, first responders. And the whole goal is to reach out to the current serving and encourage them to study the Constitution, know where the lines are, and then refuse to obey orders that would violate the constitutional rights of American citizens. And I think we saw during the COVID lockdown a spectacular example of why that's so necessary, unfortunately.
I think I first heard about the Oath Keepers in connection with, kind of almost policing the border, because there's obviously flagrant violations initially under Obama, but then continuing under Biden, of not following the immigration laws and using the kind of, I guess, discretion of, quote, enforcement to essentially keep the border open. And, a real scandal. And so I heard about the Oath Keepers in the context of, well, hey, listen, you know what? We'll go down to the border and we'll sort of at least keep watch. And so was that one of the activities that the Oath Keepers was known for?
Yes, we have done that. We're also well known for being on the rooftops in Ferguson, where we protected an entire block of businesses and homes. There were apartments over the top of the shops that the rioters had sworn they were going to burn down. And so we protected that block, and they did not burn it down. And we've been also in the news for across the country protecting free speech events and Trump supporters. But we did 12 Trump campaign rallies where we provided armed escorts outside the rally. Because when you go into a campaign rally, you got to go through Secret Service, and so Antifa will know when you come out, you're unarmed. So they'll attack people that are vulnerable, the elderly, disabled people. So we would provide escorts back to their vehicles. And that's what we were doing in D.C., in fact, for Stop the Steal in November and December and January, was protecting speakers, events, and also Trump supporters in the streets against Antifa.
This is important. Let's talk about January 6th. Was the motivation of the Oath Keepers? I mean, there are charges of seditious conspiracy and so on, and I'll get to those in a minute. But talk about the motivation for going to D.C. in the first place.
Well, the same thing we've been doing since the inauguration. We were on the ground during Trump's inauguration in 2017. Same thing, escorting people that are vulnerable through the streets of D.C. because Antifa was raging through the streets and attacking Trump supporters. And that's what we were doing again in November and December in Stop the Steal rallies, guarding events, guarding VIP speakers. We were part of the guard escort for General Flynn. We were protecting Roger Stone on January 5th and 6th. And also with events. Ellie Alexander had a scheduled permitted event right there on Capitol grounds, what's known as Area 8 at the northeast corner of the Capitol grounds. And we were tasked with protecting that event. That event didn't happen because of the crowd surging around the Capitol. But that's why we were supposed to be on the Capitol grounds under a permit that day. So that's what we're there to do. That's all we were there to do. There was no plan. I didn't tell anyone to go inside. I didn't go inside. Two of our teams did enter the Capitol on their own volition, but they did so after the doors were open from the inside. They just walked in. And you'll find no footage of any Oath Keeper beating a police officer, kicking them, hitting them with anything, or spraying with anything, because they didn't do that. In fact, there's two videos of Oath Keepers directly assisting police officers, one on the inside and one on the outside. Now, on the inside, there was a black Capitol police officer who was being confronted by a crowd of angry Trump supporters, and he had an M4 rifle in his hand and looked very agitated and like he was about ready to fire. And our guy stepped in between, de-escalated the situation, and then escorted that police officer to another group of officers and got him out of the middle of the crowd.
Let's take a short pause, Stuart, and pick it up just right after the break.
Sounds good.
If you want to know the truth behind the events of January 6, 2021, Jake Lang, incarcerated political prisoner, has it all in a documentary with footage that has never before been seen by the public. It's the raw and uncut truth about January 6th, the day when free men and women stood unarmed against tyranny and were brutalized, beaten, and even murdered on the steps of our own Capitol, and where brave Americans came together to defend the Constitution with free and fair elections. Take a journey with Jake Lang to remember the heroes who came to the Capitol to peacefully protest. Watch this documentary dedicated to Roseanne Boylan, to Ashley Babbitt, Benjamin Phillips, and Kevin Greeson, who lost their lives defending our country that day. Seeing is believing. Go now to j6truth.org. It's not about what you've heard and been told by the mainstream left media. It's the uncut truth. Go now to J6, the letter J, 6truth.org. Thank you and God bless America. I'm back on the phone with Stuart Rhodes, the founder of the Oath Keepers. He's calling in from prison, a prison in Alexandria, just outside of D.C., and we're talking about January 6th. Stuart, how can the government make an accusation, an attempt to prove it, of seditious conspiracy when, from your description, there was no sedition, no conspiracy, there were no arms taken into the Capitol, and, as you say, there's no evidence at all of attacking police officers, any of that. So how can they claim that you're conspiring as a group to overthrow, I mean, not just to take on the cops, but overthrow the government? Where does the evidence for that come from? It just seems so preposterous.
Well, it's like in the Soviet Union where the saying was, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. That was the Leninist saying. It's very same thing here. And, you know, the old saying about a grand jury, they'll undoubt a ham sandwich. So a grand jury only hears what the prosecutors tell them. They won't tell the grand jury we were there to do security. They wouldn't tell them there was a permitted event on the Capitol grounds that our men were tasked with protecting. They don't tell them anything except that here where they are, the so-called military stack going up the steps, and then they tell them they breached the door. That's a massive huge metal door with magnetic locks. You can't breach it from the outside. It was open from the inside. All they did was walk through doors already open, like so many other Trump supporters that day. So their behavior is actually equal to the people who walked and took selfies, or even better, because they were helping police officers, and yet the tarnish is put on them that they were leading an insurrection. It's just complete garbage. But it's the same garbage that's being used to smear President Trump and the entire MAGA movement. That's what it's important for everyone to understand, is the ultimate target is the MAGA movement, and their immediate target is to indict President Trump. And there's a lawsuit that Benny Thompson, the chair of the J6 Select Committee, he filed back on February 16th of 2021. And in that lawsuit, he sued President Trump, Giuliani, Oath Keepers, and Proud Boys, alleging a conspiracy to overthrow the U.S. government with Trump at the head of it. So just over a month after after January 6th, Benny Thompson, excuse me, he already had his target. He already had his script. And all he's done since then, all they've done since then, is gone and tried to manufacture the fake evidence to make that script true. And I see the January 6th Select Committee show trial as a parallel to the DOJ show trial with the same goal in mind, is to put as many Trump supporters in prison as possible, to coerce confessions, fake confessions, out of them, and then to have them turn on Trump and indict Trump.
Talk about the, you know, one of the strategies of the government is always to lay on these charges, and obviously horrific charges, in which carry very, very long sentences, life in prison, and then they use those as a legal bludgeon to get people to go, okay, you know, I'll take a severe sentence, but at least I won't be facing the risk of having my whole life sort of wiped away. But a point that people often miss about those plea bargains is often those guys have to then agree to give testimony against others. And of course, they have an incentive in that case even to give false testimony, because they're getting a deal. And it's part of the deal that they sort of rat on their friends. And who knows if what they're saying is even honest or accurate.
Oh, absolutely. It's even worse than that. They have to sign a statement of facts that they're agreeing to, that tell the big lie, that tell the manufactured evidence. So that what they did is they threatened three Oath Keepers with life in prison. They said that the judge can use the parallel to treason to sentence them. And they scared them into agreeing to test a lie, to sign on to a statement of facts that, yes, you know, Stuart Rhodes concocted a conspiracy to enter the Capitol way back in November, and they agreed to that. And then and the plea bargain mandates that they must assist the U.S. government consistent with that plea bargain, with that statement of facts. And if they vary from it or deviate from it, they could wind up being sentenced by the judge to the fullest extent of what's available in sentencing. So, you know, they're coerced into it. And that's why it took a year. So for an entire year, they did not indict me, because I didn't do anything. I didn't enter the Capitol to anybody else to go inside. So they had to go and pressure people into these plea bargains before they could have the justification to indict me.
Now, are you seriously claiming that, are you saying that they are trying to show that in November, you concocted this plan that was put into effect in January 6th? In other words, that the insurrection, in their view, goes back to 2 months before the January 6th event?
Yes. And the big reason to do that is because they eventually want to indict Trump. They want to make it, the whole big lie on their side is that Trump and everyone around him was seeking to overthrow democracy, you know, quote unquote, from November on. And they had different mechanisms for trying to do so, and ultimately it was through force. And so, yes, they're saying that I concocted, you know, back in November when I was just focused on this, protecting the November Stop the Steal rally in D.C., that I was in parallel to that concocting some kind of mastermind conspiracy to enter the Capitol. It's absolutely ludicrous, but that's what happens. And now they'll be in front of a leftist jury in Washington, D.C., in front of a leftist judge. And so it is like a Stalinistic show trial, very, very much so. They have no other evidence other than the testimony, the fake testimony of these three coerced witnesses.
Stuart, let's take a pause. When we come back, let's probe this further. I'll be right back. It's never good when the nation's supposed authority on economic policy completely misses the flashing red lights of impending inflation. Now, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has finally admitted there have been unanticipated and large shocks to the economy that have boosted energy and food prices, and supply bottlenecks that affected our economy badly that I didn't at the time fully understand. Duh. You know who understood the real threat of inflation? Well, people like me who invested in gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. They're protecting their savings from a highly turbulent economy by diversifying their 401k or IRA into gold, physical gold. And it's not too late for you to take action now. Text Dinesh to 989898 and get a free information kit on diversifying and protecting your savings with precious metals. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of satisfied customers, including me and Debbie, go ahead, text Dinesh to 989898. Get real advice from Birch Gold today. Again, text Dinesh to 989898 to claim your free, no obligation information kit on protecting your savings with gold. Guys, I'm back with Stuart Rhodes, the founder of The Oath Keepers, calling in from prison. We're talking about January 6th. Stuart, you know, in the Governor Whitmer kidnapping case, a case in which the FBI was found by a jury to, in a sense, have entrapped a couple of the defendants. What they did was they kind of stirred up these guys into a bunch of idle talk about, yeah, we're going to do this, yeah, we're going to do that. And they were able to then use that rhetoric in court to imply that there was a sort of a serious plot, a plot that the FBI itself was driving forward. So I actually have two questions for you. Number one, is there communications between Oath Keepers that has, let's just call it incendiary or irresponsible rhetoric, basically saying we're going to overthrow the government? Or is there, in fact, no such communication, and the only evidence that they're using is essentially concocted from the people who have taken the plea bargains?
Well, yes. There's, of course, I have strong opinions, and I voiced them. I did an open letter to President Trump on December 23rd. Calling the election out as being both unconstitutional and unlawful, and I encouraged him to invoke the Insurrection Act because obviously equal protection was not being preserved around in the different states. And I encouraged him also to do a massive declassification, which he has the absolute right to do, and sort out and throw out into the streets all of the dirty laundry in the CIA files and FBI files on all the corrupt politicians. And so that's all lawful, protected free speech. Everything I said never crossed the line from First Amendment free speech and assembly into incitement, and never incited direct violence. And that the same goes across all the different chats. They have Oath Keepers, of course, you know, angry about what's going on in the election and voicing their opinion and saying that, yes, we're heading into a civil war, but that's not the same thing as incitement. That's protected free speech. Same goes for President Trump. They're taking his speech, which was absolutely protected political speech, and using that to try to manufacture a non-existent conspiracy.
I mean, if Trump is exploring legal options, like, for example, I'm going to contest the election, I want Mike Pence to use his power to do this or that, Trump may or may not be right about what options are available to him, but this is hardly amounts to overthrowing democracy.
Absolutely right. He has every right, as every American does, if you run for office, to contest your election. And the Democrats themselves did it multiple times. In fact, two members of the Select Committee in the past challenge electors. So I believe it was Benny Thompson, and the other one was Swalwell. So they've done it themselves. So that's the problem, is they're trying to criminalize free speech and political participation in the process, assembly and advocacy in this country. That's what they're doing. So we're like the canaries in the coal mine. What's being done to us will be done to President Trump and his inner circle, and eventually be done to the entire MAGA movement. They see all of us as being insurrectionists. And it's very much like my old boss used to say, Ron Paul, truth is treason in the empire of lies. If you're speaking the truth like you are doing with 2,000 mules, they consider that treason because they are an empire of lies.
And are you saying that they have a kind of unlevel playing field because, you know, it'd be hard for them to get away with this, for example, in Texas. If you bring in a Texas jury, there'll be people who will see through this nonsense. But are you saying that by selecting the venue of Washington, D.C., essentially you've got the bureaucracy itself that becomes the jury. You've got judges who are part of the swamp. This is what gives the this is what takes, you know, a normal trial in a democratic society and turns it into a show trial, isn't it?
Absolutely right. It's much like the Declaration of Independence. One of the charges against the king was he would carry patriots across the seas to be tried for pretend offenses in England. And here, you're taken to Washington, D.C., the enclave of the deep state, right there, 96% Democrat, most of them working for the government, and you're being tried in front of a kangaroo court and a jury that believes you're guilty because you're a Trump supporter. I do not think any Trump supporter or Trump himself will ever get a fair trial in Washington, D.C.
What do you think about, I think it's Trump has even said this, and others have as well, that the real insurrection was not on January 6th, but was on November 3rd of 2020. Is it a fact that all of this really goes back to this, to what happened in the 2020 election?
Absolutely right. And one thing that Solzhenitsyn told us is live not by lies. And so that's why we should go back to the Constitution. Article 2, Section 1. Each state shall appoint in such manner as a legislature thereof may direct a number of electors. It must be done according to state election laws passed by the legislature. That was not done across the country by executive fiat and judicial fiat. They directly violated all the election laws, which violated the state laws and also violated the Constitution. So that's when the coup actually happened. And that's what they're trying to cover and hide. By attacking us, it's projection. They're accusing us of doing what they're doing, and it's also massive gaslighting. Oh, no, everything was fine. But the big lie that they're not even talking about was the unconstitutionality. You won't hear Bob Barr talk about that. No one asked him whether it was constitutional and was it lawful under state law, because he can't answer yes. He cannot. So they just don't talk about it.
Now, let's close out, Stuart. We have a limited amount of time, and you have a limited amount of time. Do you think that the FBI played a significant role in orchestrating January 6th and pushing it forward in a somewhat similar way that they did with the Governor Whitmer kidnapping case?
I do, in this sense. I think that what happened on that day is they made sure the doors were opened, oftentimes from the inside. They made sure that Trump supporters were funneled in. The powers that be made sure that the Capitol was not actually secured, that it was very easy for it to be breached and opened up. So, yes, I think that there are probably FBI agents and provocateurs all over that. So the hard part is sorting out who is who. I was accused of being a provocateur or an agent because I wasn't arrested for a year. So I'm very careful about accusing any other patriot of that. But I have no doubt that they were involved, absolutely.
Wow. This is eye-opening. Stuart, I hope we can have you back to talk more about all this. Thank you very much for joining me under difficult conditions. And I also want to mention the website. It is patriotslegaldefense.org, patriotslegaldefense.org. Stuart Rhodes, thank you for coming on the podcast.
And God bless you for all your work, and carry on, man. Keep
thank going. You. Appreciate thank you very much.
Right. Take care.
Are you watching your retirement slip through your hands every day? Are you worried about a black swan market event that is inevitably coming? This is an event that comes out of nowhere and basically decimates your accumulated savings. And that's not all. Interest rates going up, inflation skyrocketing. How can we protect our money? How can you get ahead of what's happening with the economy? This isn't a time to wing it or go with a hunch. You need a qualified expert on your side. Well, I'm not that expert, but my friend Rebecca Walzer is. She's a tax attorney and wealth strategist with her MBA from the London School of Economics. Rebecca and her team will help to prepare you and your money for the turbulent times ahead. We all work hard for our money, and we can use some really good guidance to help us build on what we have. Go to friendofdinesh.com and book your complimentary introductory call today to see if you qualify. That's friendofdinesh.com. Let Rebecca Walzer's team of experts protect your wealth during these unprecedented times. As I watch Liz Cheney at the January 6th hearings, I think to myself, you know, this is her, well, swan song. This is basically, she's going to be moved off the stage, and she's probably never going to be coming back. And the interesting thing is, she kind of knows it. And so what is she doing? Well, she's basically doing what a cornered animal does. She's sort of lashing out, and she's desperate. Political desperation is an interesting phenomenon to watch. And so Liz Cheney's sort of final, you may say, attempt to save her political career is to try to get Democrats to vote for her in the Republican primary in Wyoming. And the primary is coming up August 16th. And Liz Cheney has sent out a mailing to Wyoming Democrats on how to vote for her. So in order to do that, they have to change their party affiliation to vote for her. And Cheney's website apparently now has a link to a form for how you can change your party. So think about this. You've got a Republican running in a conservative Republican state trying to convince Democrats to become Republicans to vote for her. Now, She has apparently included in her campaign literature, she has directions on how Democrats can get absentee ballots. I'm now reading from Liz Cheney. Quote, voted absentee ballots must be received in the county clerk's office by 7 p.m. on election night in order to be counted. Ballots received after this deadline will not be counted. She's even giving them, like, the voter instruction rules. Now, what makes all of this odd is that, first of all, there seems to be something fundamentally unethical when you have a two-party system and you're running on rival platforms for someone in one party who is in a sense a sellout to the other party, trying to lure members of the other party, the Democratic Party, to vote in the Republican primary for, and in a sense to choose the Republican nominee that will then what? Run against a Democrat. I mean, that just seems wrong. And Cheney was asked about it, whether she's going to do this and whether she's going to try to do this. And she said no. She goes, quote, that is not something that I have contemplated, that I have organized, or that I will organize. Well, how times have changed. Cheney realizes that this may be her only path. Now, I'm going to tell you why it's not going to work, but she is trying it. And her staff was asked about it, Jeremy Adler, her spokesman, and he basically gives this non-answer, or this bogus answer. He goes, Cheney is, quote, proud to represent all Wyomingites and is working hard to earn every vote. Wait, why are you working hard to earn every vote in the Republican primary? It's one thing if you said this in the general election, but it's very suspect. I'm working hard to earn every vote. This is very suspect. Now, the reason that she's, this is snake-like behavior. Debbie's right. She's like snake. And she is a snake. She knows that in the Republican fold, she doesn't stand a chance. In fact, only 26% of GOP primary voters have a favorable view of her. Think about it. She's a long-standing incumbent. And only 26% of primary voters even have a positive view of her. Her opponent, whom I've had on the podcast, Harriet Hageman, has a 28-point lead. And look, it's not that surprising Republicans hate Liz Cheney. They see that on the January 6th committee, she's aligned with the Democrats. She's openly doing Nancy Pelosi's bidding. In fact, she's not only a sidekick of Pelosi, she's sort of leading the charge. So when you're leading the charge for the opposition on an issue that matters greatly to Republicans, I mean, what do you expect? This isn't, in a sense, even personal against Liz Cheney. It's just that you're not somebody who's fighting for our side. Why on earth would we think of nominating you? Interestingly, also, there's an element of dishonesty, and Debbie and I are going to talk about this probably later on the week, where Liz Cheney's campaign literature doesn't say one word about the January 6th hearings, not even a reference to it. She talks about, I'm a conservative, I voted for this, I voted for that. But obviously her visibility, her national visibility, is solely based upon her participation in these January 6th committee hearings. Let's remember that Kevin McCarthy withdrew from the January 6th committee because Nancy Pelosi was, in a sense, manipulating who the Republicans were on this committee. Nancy Pelosi's like, I'll take these two. I'm not going to take those. Kevin McCarthy's like, wait a minute. Who gives you the authority to nominate who the Republican members of this committee are? So we're out of here. But then Nancy Pelosi realized, I need a Republican fig leaf. You know, I've got this doofus Kinzinger. He'll, like, cry on cue. You know, this guy is like a complete fake. And, of course, his political career is completely over. But Pelosi realized, who else can I get who's going to kind of play my game? Liz Cheney, you know, she's got a beef. She's got a family grudge and, you know, she's lost all sight of reason and she's however conservative she is on other issues, that's not what matters to her. What matters to her is like, I got to get Trump. And whatever I have to do that. So Pelosi's like, what a convenient, you know, useful idiot, to bring onto my side. Her personal grudges override everything. And look, so Liz Cheney gets to sort of do her last act, which is to enact out this kind of ancient feud, if you will. But in the meantime, in Wyoming, a powerful tsunami is building that basically is going to consume once and for all Liz Cheney.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
Joe Biden is a strange combination of malevolence and dementia. Now, normally those two things don't really go together. The malevolent people are Machiavellian. They're really smart. They plot. They scheme. They carry out conspiracies and organized frauds. And then the demented people are the guys who kind of sit around in a circle and they don't know what's going on. Or they develop utterly crazy ideas like, you know, I'm Napoleon Bonaparte. And Biden is the strange hybrid of both. He's not entirely one. He's not entirely the other. We have, of course, the funny opening scene in 2000 Mules where Biden goes, I've put together the most extensive voter fraud operation in U.S. history. And it's, of course, a perfect quotation for the movie because it summarizes the theme of the movie. Now, of course, I know and we know that Biden actually sort of meant to say the opposite. This was a, quote, gaffe, but it's a gaffe where Biden accidentally told the truth. I'm kind of amused by all the fact checks on that where they go, no, this is not really accurate. This is not what Biden meant. If you look at the full context, he actually meant something different. Well, let's leave aside what he meant because that's his intention in his head. This is what he said. So we have an odd situation where a grown man says the exact opposite of what he believed. It's not just a single misstatement of a word. Like they're trying to go after poor Mary Miller. Mary Miller is a lovely person. And she was at the pro-life. She was talking about the pro-life issue. Trump endorsed her. She has her primary, in fact, coming up tomorrow. She's been on this podcast. And she was talking about the right to life, but she accidentally said white. The word white came out and she immediately corrected it. Media's like, oh, Mary Miller's just talking about she's against abortion because she wants to protect whites. Come on, this is absurd. But that's an example of just something that is a verbal misstatement. That was not the case with Biden. His actual language was the opposite of what he meant to say. And he does this all the time. This wasn't a single case. Well, apparently the people around Biden know this. They know they're dealing with somebody who sort of should be in a nursing home. And there's finally a little telling item of proof about this. Biden was recently at a meeting. This was a meeting with a bunch of people, and then there were some people joining virtually. And Biden had in his hand a note card. And he accidentally held up the note card. He wasn't supposed to. But you could read the note card. You could actually see what they meaning the people around Biden, are telling him. And I want to go through what they say to him because it is exactly how you would talk to like a 3-year-old, to a toddler, right? So they're addressing Biden in toddler language as if he is a total and complete idiot. Which, of course, he is. And so that's the point of the note. You wouldn't need the note if you're dealing with an adult, rational person. And we're not even talking about a really smart person. I mean, you know, you may have a relative or a friend who's a complete dummy, but you wouldn't even give that guy this note. So let's look at the note. I mean, here's Biden holding up the note with one of those goofball expressions on his face. But I'm going to read the note verbatim and comment on it along the way. First of all, you enter the Roosevelt room and say hello to participants. Is it necessary to tell him that he has to enter the room? And by the way, you is in all caps. You enter the Roosevelt room and say hello. They have to tell him, make sure you say hello. He doesn't already know that. Hello, hello, hello. Say hello. Number two, my favorite. You, all caps, take your seat. All caps. In other words, Biden, don't take anyone else's seat. You take your seat. This is fantastic stuff. Can you imagine other world leaders are now looking at this? You take your seat. What does Putin think? What does Xi think? Three, press enters. Biden is to be told the press will now enter the room. For you, all caps, as if Biden is confused between him and someone else, you give brief comments. And really brief, by the way, 2 minutes. Don't speak for more than 2 minutes. Everybody will know you're out of your mind. And then press departs. The press will be removed. Then you, all caps, ask Liz Schuler President AFL-CIO a question. Note Liz is joining virtually. First of all, he doesn't obviously know who Liz Schuler is. He has to be told she's the head of the ACLU. Of the AFL-CIO. Finally, and again, why is this even necessary? It would not be necessary with a normal person. Quote, you thank participants. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. He has to be told. Thank you very much. And finally, this is my second favorite. You depart.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. Or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.